production support for Earth Eats comes from Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And need more coffee roasters? A woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. Offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Located on Pete Ellis Drive. NeedMoreRoasters.com. From WFIU, this is Kate Young. Welcome to Earth Eats.
I have the wonderful opportunity to work with the jalapenos, which is why I'm wearing these blue surgical gloves so that I don't end up with a hot jalapeno on my face all day.
You might remember this story from last fall about a collective salsa-making adventure. A group of women get together every year around this time and crank out batch after batch of salsa from local summer produce. They put it all up in jars to enjoy throughout the year. It's a big production, but they managed to make it fun. Alex Chambers has some fresh news stories for us, and we have a new autumnal salad recipe from Chef Daniel Orr. So stay with us. First, let's check in with Alex Chambers for the news.
Hi, Kate. Who would have thought that food assistance could be threatening? Apparently, immigrants, including documented immigrants, are starting to feel that way. And pesticides. Turns out they don't just affect the pests. States have seen a sharp drop in the number of immigrants accepting federal nutrition help for their children due to fears about White House immigration policies. Agencies in at least 18 states are reporting a steep decline in the rolls for WIC, a nutrition program that targets pregnant women and children. WIC serves about half the babies born in the U.S. by providing vouchers to help pregnant women and parents buy food and infant formula. Politico reports that immigrant families have been calling health providers and asking to be removed from WIC. The drop in enrollment follows reports about Trump administration plans to deny visa renewals or green cards for immigrants who have used public benefits. According to documents leaked earlier this year, the Department of Homeland Security planned to broaden the government's definition of benefits to include earned income tax credits, health insurance subsidies, and WIC. The Migration Policy Institute estimated that the number of non-citizens who could be deemed a public charge under the proposed rule would increase from 3% to almost 50% nationally. Health advocates say declining use of WIC puts more babies at risk of low birth weight and other issues. Along with public health risks, limiting the use of WIC is unlikely to save money as it can drive up healthcare costs overall. When the most commonly used pesticide in the world also harms insects that crops depend on, you look for a solution. But what happens when the solution is as bad as the problem? A report in the journal Nature warns that a new insecticide called sulfoxaflor is harmful to bees, too. Sulfoxaflor is a class of insecticides that was created as a solution to neonicotinoid insecticides. Neonicotinoids are based on the chemical structure of nicotine and attack insect nervous systems. They were developed to fight insects that eat plants' sap and roots. But they also disorient bees, making it hard for them to find their way home after foraging. And they lower bees' resistance to disease. The report in Nature shows that both kinds of pesticides impair colony growth and reproduction. The older pesticides also make it hard for bees to forage. Research has not found evidence that the new class of pesticides has that effect. Many countries are phasing out neonicotinoid-based pesticides. The European Union banned three of them in open fields. They're now restricted to covered greenhouses. Canada announced earlier this month that it's phasing out two of those pesticides that are frequently used on canola, corn, and soybean crops. The new class of pesticides is on the rise. Two sulfoxaflor-based pesticides are approved for sale in the U.S. under the brand names Transform and Closer. Sulfoxaflor is also registered in Argentina, Australia, Canada, China, India, Mexico, and several other countries. And that's the news. Thanks to Chad Bouchard and Taylor Killow for those reports.
And thank you, Alex Chambers. Have you ever had a dish made with frika? It's a grain which resembles bulgur, and that's the thing you make tabbouleh with. But this is more coarse, and it has a distinctive smoky flavor. That comes from the way it's processed. Frika is durum wheat, but it's harvested while it's still green and soft. And then it's gently roasted over an open fire while it's still in the husk. In the Middle East, you can find it whole or cracked, but here in the U.S., you'll mostly find it cracked. And that's the way Chef Daniel Orr is using it in this fall salad recipe.
We have some frika, which I cooked with toasted in a little bit of olive oil, cooked in about 3 parts water to 1 part grain. And put that in a mixing bowl. Season with salt, pepper. And we're going to add some diced apples to that. So I've got some nice little apples here that we're going, two apples, probably about 2 cups of diced apple. Just coarsely chop them so they've got a nice texture. And that will also lighten the salad up. If you leave things a little bit chunky, it actually makes your salad seem lighter. And I've got about 6 scallions. We're going to cut those about 1/3-inch pieces. And then as I get down to the white bulbs, I'm going to cut a little bit smaller. So that's kind of the spicier part of the onion, so we'll make those a little smaller. And then apple and cheddar goes really well together. But if we want to make something vegan, we can always add a different kind of cheese. And this is a almond cheddar cheese. Say 1/2 cup to 3/4 cup. Dice that. And that's going to give you that kind of richness. We're going to add a full tomato to this. Just going to season this with a little bit of salt and pepper. I love black pepper, and a lot of people don't, they just think black pepper, they don't really know where it comes from. It actually grows on a vine, and it has these little seed pods that grow down. Most pepper comes from one type of plant. So black peppercorns, white peppercorns, green peppercorns, they are all the same plant. It's just different points of its growing. So the green peppercorn, of course, is when it's green and it's young. And usually you'll find those dehydrated or pickled. Then you have black peppercorns, which are a little bit further along in the maturity process, and they're dried. And to me, that is the most fragrant time of the peppercorn's life. And then white peppercorns are a fully matured peppercorn that has been cleaned, and it's just the hardest, most hearty, most spicy part of the peppercorn. We're going to dress it, simple dressings, splash of olive oil, and that's like for 4 people, 2 tablespoons, not a lot. Okay, and then your acid of choice. Today I'm going to grab some of my garlic scape vinegar and just add about 1/3 of what I added of the oil. Generally vinaigrettes are 1 part acid to 3 parts oil. And that's going to give you a nice balance. If you like things a little bit more sour, you're going to knock yourself out. And again, you can always add more. You can't take it out. I'm going to toss this together. It's really homey. This is a great dish. You can make a batch of this and then eat it every day for lunch for a week. Take it to work with you. Very, very nutritious frika, apple, and cheddar salad.
You're going to love the way that earthy, smoky grain plays off the cheddar with a spark of crisp, tart apple. I've seen several different apple varieties showing up in the farmers markets around here, but I expect to see even more in the next few weeks. Get the recipe for this simple salad at eartheats.org. Production support comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. And Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Tomatoes, peppers, hot chilies. Yep, it's salsa season. I just put up 12 jars featuring some hot paper lantern chilies from my own garden. They're a variety of habanero, and they're very hot. This got me reminiscing about the first story I produced for Earth Eats, the one about the collective salsa-making day out at Marsha Veldman's farm in Brown County. It just so happens that was precisely 1 year ago. So we decided to air it again this week. Enjoy. In traditional farming communities, several households might get together to put up the season's green beans, or get the peaches canned in quart jars with a light syrup, or maybe make enough blackberry jam to last three families through the winter. The phrase, "many hands make light work," really comes into play when you're talking about food preservation. Collective cooking has the added benefit of building community. Here's a story of those food traditions revived, and a group of friends making good use of another brilliant farmsteading practice, the outdoor kitchen, or summer kitchen.
I have the wonderful opportunity to work with the jalapenos, which is why I'm wearing these blue surgical gloves so that I don't end up with a hot jalapeno on my face all day.
Yeah, we learn
with practice. None of us are at our first rodeo, I think.
So, can you tell me where you are and what you're doing?
I'm at the salsa weekend of the year, and we're here making lots and lots of salsa, hoping to set a new record in canned salsa.
We are on a beautiful porch in Brown County. It's a lovely day. Sun and a nice breeze and some birds and some crickets and we are making salsa to hopefully last us through the winter when we all need a taste of summer. And it's a group of women and we come together to chop vegetables and cook salsa and enjoy each other's company and eat some delicious food.
That was Mary Beth O'Brien, Jean Haley, and Laura Haley. The day I joined them in late August, about 20 to 25 women were gathered at Meadowlark, Marsha Veldman's farm in southern Indiana. They've been gathering annually in a spacious outdoor kitchen for this salsa-making event. Sharing equipment and pooling resources to make large batches of salsa for canning. At the end of the long summer day, each woman takes home her share of jarred salsa. I asked Carrie Newcomer, who was chopping sweet peppers under a green canvas patio umbrella, how many years she'd been coming to Salsa Day.
Well, someone told me once, no matter how many years ago you think something is, you should double it. But I think five or more. I'm thinking five, so it might be somewhere in there.
I was trying to remember that earlier, and I think at least five, maybe more. Between 5 and 10, I'm going to say.
So I've been coming since 2011, so this would be my sixth year.
This is my second year, so I'm very, very excited and grateful to be here.
This is my third year.
I think I've been here from the beginning. Did we establish a beginning date?
It's got to be 10 years, at least.
She said, Marsha said that this was the 20th year.
Oh, God.
Have I been here since the beginning?
the beginning.
Okay, I don't know.
To get the whole story on the origins of this tradition, I sat down with host and founder Marcia Veldman on her front porch.
This is the 20th annual gathering.
Wow, 20 years. What initially inspired you to do it?
So it was the first year I lived here and had a big garden. A friend was growing for market here, and we just had a bumper crop of tomatoes. And so just four of us got together and made salsa, and we had so much fun doing it that then the next year someone else said, well, can I do this with you guys too? And we just kind of kept adding more people and more tomatoes, and now it's a big gathering. We've actually been using the same recipe all 20 years, and it's a really good recipe. Over the years, as the amount of salsa we make has grown, we've really developed a system so that we can keep track amongst the mayhem.
I can remember the early days when we were trying to make sure the salsa was nice and chunky. So we would pour the cooked salsa into the colander, and then all that delicious sauce would pour through, and we were pouring it down the drain. Right, I know. And then it's just like, wait a minute, guys, we need to jar that stuff and make the most delicious Bloody Marys, or make the most delicious soup base, or stuff to cook your rice in. So, I mean, I remember the year that we kind of had that idea, and I can think about everything throughout the system and sort of remember the year we came up with that system or that protocol, and why we did it and how we did it before, and why it's such a well-oiled machine.
I asked Marcia if all those gorgeous fresh vegetables for the salsa came from her own farm.
Quite a bit comes from the farm, and then other people have gardens and they bring product, and then we buy a lot at the farmers market too. This year it looks like we'll do something like 180 to 200 pounds of tomatoes being processed. So,
and about how many jars of salsa is that going to be?
I can answer that one later.
Okay, yeah, it sounds good.
Last year, I keep notes every year, like how many, we call them kits, when it's like a full batch of salsa is a kit. And then I also track how many different sizes of jars that we were able to produce.
The process starts with the kits. I visited Tiffany Kinney at the weighing station to find out what makes a kit.
I am weighing the tomatoes and getting all the produce ready so it can go up to the processors.
What all goes into a kit?
15 pounds tomatoes, 4 bell peppers, 10 hot peppers, and then 5 mild peppers, 2 bulbs of garlic, and 6 onions. Then we'll do about 12 kits today.
Next, I stepped over to the processing table to see if I could pin Mary Beth down on the recipe.
We have tomatoes, of course. We have onions, we have sweet peppers, and hot peppers. And then we have some vinegar, and then some dry ingredients, which includes sugar, cumin. Oops, wait.
Is that your secret recipe?
That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to say anything else.
Okay, so we got the basics.
Is the stage that I enjoy the most, where we get the kits and we start chopping and putting everything in the food processor. So I just chopped a bunch of beautiful heirloom tomatoes and put them in the food processor, and now they're going to go into the sauce pot. There's the kit that's full of vegetables. It has like the tomatoes, the peppers, the garlic, the onions, and then there's a jar that has all the vinegar that you need, and then another jar, which is really beautiful, that has the salt and the spices in it, and the sugar.
That was Stephanie Solomon. This is her third year at Salsa Day. Next, I headed up the stairs to find out what Tyler Ferguson was up to.
I'm in the cooking station. So once all the ingredients are chopped and put into the pot, we bring it up to this station and we cook for 20 minutes. We bring it to a boil and then we let it simmer for 20 minutes. Then when it finishes here, it goes back down the steps to the canning station.
That's fantastic. So it looks like you have how many cooking stations or heat
sources?
Well, in my station, we have two burners, so we've been cooking pretty much two pots all day long. And then down in the canning station, there's also two burners, and those are the two burners we use for the canning process. And we've gotten a little backed up, so we have a third canning station in the kitchen. It's ready to go, but we haven't had to take any cans there yet. But you want the water to be boiling and ready to go if we have to move to that station.
I follow a pot of cooked salsa down to the canning station to talk with Laura Haley.
Started out chopping, and now I'm canning.
All right. What's your favorite area to work in when you come to this?
I think I like them all, but I think this is fun just to bring them out and just see what's happening. So I think the canning area is fun, yeah.
You have to keep careful track of the time and everything?
Right, keep track of the time. You usually get a timer going, but yeah. The chopping station's great too because that's where you catch up with everybody and, you know, chit-chat and everything like that. So that's fun. I start out there and then I usually move over here.
This station's a little more serious.
Well, I don't know about that, but it's definitely fast-paced.
Gotcha.
Laura got me listening intently for the most satisfying sound of canning, the pop of the lid when the jar seals. Did you hear it? Okay, one more time. I asked Marcia and some of the other salsa makers, why would they want to get together for a day full of messy collective cooking and canning in the heat of late summer? It sounds exhausting to me.
It is a lot of work, but it's really fun, and it's also rewarding, and there's something just so incredibly awesome sharing this with other women, and also in the wintertime, opening up that jar of summer sunshine is just so delightful.
So why not just make some salsa at home in your own kitchen?
Well, I consider myself a worker bee, so I don't have all the equipment and all the know-how. So when we do it all together, everyone can take a part, but not every person needs to know how to do every single thing. So it's a really cool teamwork type of situation, and it's more fun to be with friends and to talk and chat and drink a beer maybe and enjoy tastes of salsa. It's just so much fun to be out here.
It's a lot about gathering with friends and doing something productive and fun together, and something that throughout the whole year we're reminded of it.
Amina Shabani shared the source of her motivation.
It's the community and also just being a part of the process, especially at the end when I eat the salsa in the winter. I think about the beautiful day, but it's just a community of women being here and, yeah, making good salsa, amazing salsa.
When she's not making salsa, Carrie Newcomer is an accomplished singer-songwriter. She has perhaps been the most inspired by the annual event.
Marcia tells me that you may have written a song that was inspired by Salsa Day.
I did. It's called The Work of Our Hands. And it's I was here one of the years, and what I noticed at the end of the day that everybody was thinking about dividing up the jars, and there was this wonderful conversation about who they were planning to give their jars of salsa. We would keep some for ourselves, of course, but all these people we were planning to give the jars of salsa to. And it was just such a lovely thing that the work of our hands, these things we do that seem so small but are really so great.
Some of the hands working on the salsa have also joined Marcia in the field, growing the fresh ingredients.
It's just been such a pleasure in the last few years. Friends have started farming here. Some of us work through the winter, you know, building the soil and preparing the beds, and to kind of go through that whole cycle to putting salsa in jars together. And it's been wonderful.
because it's good to put a little bit by. But when the late snows fly, all that love so neatly came by the work of our hands.
And taking us out there was Carrie Newcomer's song, The Work of Our Hands, from her album, A Permeable Life. Thanks to all the salsa makers for sharing their day with me. I'm compelled to add a word of caution to those listeners inspired to can your own batch of salsa at home. Be sure to follow a canning recipe if you plan to use a boiling water bath method for salsa. Canning recipes will have the proper ratio of added acidity to make sure your product is safe to eat when you pop it open in the middle of winter. For links to trusted canning resources, check out our website, eartheats.org.
Dirty boots and coveralls, and bow my head to the waitress and nurse, tip my hat to the farmer and clerk, all those saints with skeleton pans, and the work of their hands, and the work of their hands.
I ran into Mary Beth O'Brien, who you heard in this story, earlier in the week. She said they already had their salsa making day out at Marsh's farm about 2 weeks ago. So the tradition continues.
Laid out on the counter, pulled up out of hot water, the work of our hands so faithful and true. I make something barely there, music is a little more than air. So now every year I'll put by tomatoes and pears.
Production support comes from Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. Offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Located on Pete Ellis Drive, needmoreroasters.com. Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. And The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom, step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. Earth Eats happens because of Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killo, Daniel Orr, everyone at Farm Bloomington Restaurant, the IU Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks to Marsha Veldman and all the women at Salsa Day. Earth Eats theme music is composed by Aaron Toby and performed by Aaron and Matt Toby. Our executive producer is John Bailey. Thanks for listening to Earth Eats this week. I'm Kate Young, signing off. See you next time.